Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us. You can join us here by writing to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. We're having a few phone problems. You can try to roll in at 410-319-8888, but we're working on it. Let's hope we can get your calls in because we're here with Doug Gansler, who's our attorney general and who's seeking to become the next governor of the state of Maryland. Doug, welcome. Good to have you with us.
It's good to be here. Thanks.
So why'd you wait so long to declare?
You know, it's a funny thing. If
everybody else is out there.
Yeah, they all are out there, and it's kind of weird. So I announced on September 24th, which is a full 9 months to the day before the primary and well over a year until the general election. And people are like, well, why'd you wait so long? It's like, you know, I wanted somebody other than my mother and maybe you to care about, you know, the next election before we announce. So, you know, it's a long time. I actually have a job. You know, I'm the attorney general for Maryland. I was the head of all 50 of us, the attorneys general of the United States. So, you know, I felt like I should do my job. That's what people elected me to do. And now I'll have to navigate the campaign as well for the next 9 months.
So there are a lot of things that we want to ask you here, and I hope we can get through your calls. If not, you can please write us at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Our able producer, Stephanie Marvonos, will make sure I get the tweets right. Join us on the Facebook. I'll check that in a minute, either Mark Steiner or the Mark Steiner Show page, 410-319-8888, if we can get you through. I hope we can. Political question first. When do you announce your lieutenant governor candidate with you, your teammate?
Yeah, I would think within the next week or two. You know, it's an interesting dynamic as well because I'm running on my own record and my own vision for the state, and we've been going around talking about different ideas. Matter of fact, we have an ideas forum tomorrow at Loyola University. We're going to be talking about the K-12.
Which university?
Loyola.
Loyola, here.
It's right here
in
the great
city.
Yeah, great city of Baltimore. Yeah. You know, I'm the Baltimore candidate. I work here every day. You know, I should mention
your
that.
Your office is here.
Yeah.
I know that, yeah.
You know, I'm actually, I think, the only attorney general in the country that doesn't work in the Capitol. Somebody got mad at somebody in 1860 and moved it from Annapolis to Baltimore. So, you know, we've been, you know.
It took longer to get to Annapolis in 1860.
Exactly, yeah. The horse would have to stop every so often. We've been doing this ideas forum. We're the candidate of ideas. We have a vision for the state. The guy I'm running against has been doing sort of more of the endorsement track, getting the old school entrenched machine behind him.
And we're running against two people right now.
Two people. Yes,
the Mazzia is also running.
That's right. Yes, she is, and she's a good candidate and been doing good things. But the lieutenant governor has been doing a different approach than I have had, and so we've been doing the ideas piece, and I've been running on my records or what I've done and where I want to take the state. And, you know, I've been doing that now since I've been a candidate for a few weeks, and we'll kind of get to the lieutenant governor next.
So, Mark in Annapolis, I'm going to try to come to your call. Give me a second. I want to try to get a couple of questions in here, and then we can come right to your question. 410-319-8888. And if Mark in Annapolis gets through, it means the rest of you all can get through. 410-319-8888. But a couple of things. You, your office argued for the state around the historically black college universities lawsuit about not getting adequate funding and about the question of repeating colleges and courses that they have into majority white institutions, which they say sucks students away and doesn't allow white students who are not African American to want to come to their institutions, all that. So that was decided against you.
Well, it wasn't decided against me. It was decided against the state. We're the lawyers.
But the AG's office argued it, right?
The AG's argued it because we have to, as a constitutional obligation, we represent the state and the governor. But, you know, it's interesting. The take has been that the case was lost. And there's a lot of ways to define win and loss in life.
Yes.
And in this case.
Yes.
I actually, you know, the lawyers on the case think they won a huge victory. The way it was portrayed in the newspaper was because they lost one component of it that they lost. But the most important part from a legal standpoint, when you get to the underlying issue, which is the issue I'm actually much more concerned with, which is more my issue. But the big issue in this was, have the HBCUs been funded adequately over time? And the court found that they have been. And that was the big issue that was brought in the case. There was a smaller issue in the case involving duplicity and Fordyce, and whether or not there were to your point, whether or not there were duplicating programs, and people can argue whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, because some people say right here at Morgan State, the number of people that has actually gone up since that happened. So they think it's a major victory. The newspaper portrayed it as a sort of mixed bag. from my perspective, Doug Gansler's perspective, candidate for governor, attorney general, I think the whole thing was a win. And I think the whole thing was a win for this reason. The case was brought, and what it did was it focused people's attention on what has been the funding for HBCUs. Has it been adequate? Just because it's legally adequate, which is what the court found, does that mean it's really adequate? And shouldn't we be giving more money, and not only just money, but having more sort of focus on our HBCUs and trying to promote and foster our HBCUs going into the future? And I think this case has enhanced that dialogue in a very positive way.
And it would be on the next governor's agenda to have to, it seemed to me, maybe on the agenda to have the negotiations to find out how to resolve it.
Well,
beyond the courts.
Right, to resolve the piece that the court found regarding the mediation, regarding right. the different programs. And that actually is a good thing. I mean, for example, one of the things I want to do is I want to put a law school at Bowie State, one of our four HBCUs, because I think we have diversity problems in the legal field, for example. You know, so there's a lot that can be done down the road, but there's a lot of room in the mediation for programming, which I think could be used very positively to help all four HBCUs in the future. But even going beyond that, why does it take 14 years to put a new building up at HBCU and 6 years at a white school? I mean, these are issues that nobody seems to have concerned themselves with over the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I think we ought to be able to look at that in the wake of this case.
Let's see if we can get to the phones. 410-319-8888. Mark in Annapolis, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my question.
Welcome.
My question was for Mr. Gansler.
Yeah.
I read a lot about his policy proposal over the summer to reform Public Information Act requests in Maryland. It was interesting what he said. My question was about a story that came out last week, to which Fox was investigating the procedures for different offices on Public Information Acts and called his office one of the biggest obstacles to that act in Maryland. I was kind of curious how Mr. Gansler proposed to kind of change how that would work for his office and how he would reform that going forward.
Well, it's not really – it's a little bit kind of like Mark's question about us representing HBCUs. Just so it's clear, the function of the Attorney General's office is we are the lawyers for every state agency. We're the lawyer for the governor. We're the lawyer for the legislature. And you know, we have a number of other roles, obviously, doing all the criminal appeals and prosecution and so forth. We don't make policy at the Attorney General's office. We practice the law. We follow the policy. So right now, the PIA world and transparency in government in general, I think, is very opaque, and we need to make it far more crystal clear, far more transparent, far more accessible to the public. But that requires the changing the law and the legal landscape so that the future attorney general in his or her practice defending PIA requests will have to give more information out.
Let's get another caller in here, then we'll move on to some of the questions. So folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. And Jill, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, Jill.
I'm just calling a little bit frustrated. My question is, you know, I'm sick of the Republicans in Washington, how they shut down our government. And Mr. Gansler, I'd just like to know, if you're elected, what stance would you take regarding the Republicans here in Maryland?
What stance would I take? That's an interesting question. I mean, I didn't know where you were going with that. You know, look, the federal government, what's going on there is exactly why there's so much cynicism in government. Everyone seems to have forgotten who they represent and what they're supposed to be doing there. And they're standing on ideology and they're horse trading on stupid stuff. Meanwhile, real people are losing their jobs and the government is literally shut down. So clearly that's not working. I think in Maryland, we need to, you know, work with each other. We need to, you know, figure out what are the best things for all of Maryland. And so, you know, my mantra has always been to work well with people, to get along with people of all ideologies. We all want the same thing. We all want good education for our children. We all want to have good and high-paying jobs. We all want public safety. So I don't think we ought to be standing on politics. I think we ought to be representing the people. The whole reason why I'm running for governor, to take a sort of big step back, and why I've been in public service for 22 years and running government agencies for the last 15 is to give voice to the voiceless, to see who really needs the help of government. Where should government step in and help people lift up all boats? And I think that's what we need to be doing and not sort of bickering over political pettiness.
So, and as long as these phones keep working, we'll take your calls at 410-319-8888. So give it a try, and we'll keep trying to get you on the air. 410-319-8888 as we talk with Doug Gansler, Attorney General for the state of Maryland, who's seeking the Democratic nomination in the June primary to become the next governor of the state of Maryland. 410-319-8888. So let's outline some of the differences between you and some of the other candidates in some ways. There was a thing, obviously, in the paper this morning, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown came out and said that he wants to have a pre-K set up for everybody in the state of Maryland by 2023, whatever that date was. And you came out earlier saying that you wanted to have pre-K for all people who are under the poverty line who in the state of Maryland. And Heather Mazier says she's going to come out with her statement next week. So are these nuanced differences? What do they really mean?
Well, first of all, we want to congratulate the Lieutenant Governor for coming out with his first proposal of actually an idea of what he wants to do moving forward. It was the first one. It was a one sentence proposal, but it was a proposal nonetheless. So that's good. It sort of, because it goes to Jill's call a second ago as to, you know, why are we in this? What are the ideas and what is the record and what is the vision? So we've had a number of rollouts. We've talked about reentry. We've talked about HBCUs. We've talked about domestic violence and a number of things. One of the things I talked about was exactly the proposal he came out with, and I said what I wanted to do was to extend the pre-K program from the half day to the full day. And what was originally in the legislation when they were going to expand to table gaming was that the money from the newly found money from table gaming, not taxpayer money, gambling money, was going to go from table games directly into having all day pre-K. And the reason why that is so important is because while some people will literally out loud say, we've got the number one schools in the country, and I always say, well, that's great because right, we're in Baltimore, and if you think the public schools in Baltimore are the number one schools in the country, I want you to vote for the other people because we are concerned with the minority achievement gap. We have the number two minority achievement gap in the United States. One of the reasons why that is because children show up at kindergarten already behind. They're already lacking cognitive skills, haven't got the training, haven't gotten the development that children from higher economic strata have. And so we wanted to expand the pre-K to full K. The motive behind it was to help underserved communities, help the people that end up being victims of the minority achievement gap and the achievement gap that we have in Maryland. We were clearly, obviously, it's open to everybody. You know, we want to extend pre-K from half day to full day. We're just motivated by the underserved community. And that's probably, and we hope, who will take advantage of it. Tomorrow, we're going to continue to roll out our pre-K early education policy program.
So one of the things you've come out with is that you've talked about, you and the Republican candidates, but not the Democratic candidates, have talked about cutting the corporate tax.
Yeah, so
that's a huge leap for some people to hear a Democrat say why.
I don't understand why that is, because President Barack Obama, Steny Hoyer, every Democrat on the Hill has talked about dropping our corporate tax, and it's an interesting thing because the Washington Post headline was like GOP Gansler proposes
exactly
dropping
the Post, and it was like, said, right.
Yeah, by the way, that was a Metro story article. It wasn't an editorial, but they, right. And what's interesting is it's a very much of a Democratic idea. And the reason why it's a Democrat, look, I don't own a company, so I'm not benefiting from a reduced corporate tax. I can barely pay my electric bill. So, you know,
have a big house?
No. So the issue is that I was the first statewide elected official to come out for raising the minimum wage from $7.25 to $10. If you're working 40 hours a week at $7.25, you're still below the federal poverty line. The same day I said, but we're losing our jobs. We're bleeding jobs to our neighboring states, Virginia, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. We have three Fortune 500 companies left in Maryland. Right here in Baltimore, in Baltimore City, 46% of the adults are unemployed. And so what are we going to do about that? Well, if two products are quite similar, I look at Virginia because they're the ones really stealing all of our jobs. If you look at two products that are relatively similar, right now we have an 8.25 corporate tax rate in Maryland, 8.25, and in Virginia, it's 6%. and West Virginia is about to go down to 6.25 or 6.5, I think. And so if one product is $8.25, that is the Maryland tax rate, and next to it on the shelf there's another product that's $6, that's pretty similar if not the same, everyone's going to keep taking the $6 one. And no one's going to ever take that $8.25 off the shelf. And that's what's happening to our jobs here in Maryland. So what I'm saying is we need to get our jobs back. We can't continue to deplete our jobs. We then increase our tax base. More people are working, therefore paying into the tax base. And we can do the social things that we want to do as Democrats. And so I think this is the most Democratic of ideas. It's clearly President Obama's with me on this. I ran his campaign. I love him. I respect him. And that's where we are on this.
So you think that what guarantees do you get back from these businesses if you cut the corporate taxes?
Well, you don't get guarantees. There's no sort of it's not a transactional thing. It's just that if you raise the minimum wage and reduce the corporate tax, Maryland gets jobs back here, and we are in far better shape fiscally and economically in the future. And we bring right now as we're talking, Virginia's putting $1 billion into a rainy day fund. They have extra money because they have jobs. Maryland, every year we go to the legislature, we confront almost a $1 billion deficit because we're losing jobs. And so it seems to me that should be our number one focus, getting our economy back on track, getting cybersecurity, getting life sciences, you know, reducing the corporate tax while raising the minimum wage, making Maryland attractive again and open for business, open for jobs, so that we can expand our tax base and do the things that I don't want to speak for you, I, as a Democrat, would like to do. Though I would guess you probably on when you get behind those closed doors, you probably pull the D button.
410-319-8888. Doug Ames is our guest, Attorney General for the state of Maryland, ready to become the next governor of the state of Maryland. We have a mail came in asking, please ask Attorney General Ganser why he opposed guaranteeing poor people a lawyer at first appearance and at bail review hearings, leaving them without a lawyer in most of Maryland's counties for 3 days or longer. The impact is greatest on poor African and Latino Americans in our state. And I would just add to that, and now that the court has ruled that is in fact what has to happen, which I think your office had to argue against.
I don't know that we did, but if you tell me we did,
I thought you maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. So
it's an interesting issue. I mean, you know.
So now that the highest court in Maryland has said that is going to be the law, that the state of Maryland, let's say, is going to come up with the money to pay for it. So A, why did you oppose it, and B, what are you going to do if you're governor to deal with having to ensure that their lawyers at bail?
Well, I certainly didn't oppose it. So someone in my office may have, so I don't want to sort of but I think the reason why it would have been opposed, I suppose, was because the public defenders were opposing it because of the system on that piece has worked quite well. Now, in Montgomery County, where I was the state's attorney, they did have counsel. There would be a lawyer there for every bond hearing that come up. It was all done by interesting, it was by television, you know, by video, and there'd be a lawyer there representing everybody. Now, that wouldn't ultimately necessarily be their lawyer going forward. They were sort of the on-call public defender that would make the arguments for bail and bond. I think that system's great. I think that every defendant should have everyone charged should have somebody representing them at the bond hearing, at the bail hearing. We did it in Montgomery County. It worked flawlessly. The reason why the public defenders were against it was because of the cost. And we have to recognize now the Court of Appeals has said that people do need counsel. We need to make sure that they have adequate funding to have counsel.
But we're going to have to come up with whatever that number is, $10 to $26 million, whatever the real number is. People argue about
the numbers. Yeah, I was going to say, it's a phony baloney number. It depends. It's going to have some cost, yes. And the question is, I actually think the system that was done in Montgomery County is a good one, where there's a – because then the cost isn't prohibitive. You just have to have somebody there representing them. They can bring their own lawyer if they want, or they could use the public defender for that purpose and that purpose alone, and then to get somebody later to represent them, or if they can't afford one, they'll have one appointed to them.
Mike just called in to ask if you have picked your running mate yet. The answer is no. You may have, but you're not telling us until next week.
Yeah, we're in the final stages of that. You know, I'm just making sure we pick somebody that has sort of the passion and the authenticity and the vision for the state that I have. This is actually setting up quite well. Heather Mazur is a wonderful candidate, but if you look at the lieutenant governor versus me, you know, I think it's all about status quo versus change. And so I want to make sure I have a change agent along with
me. So are you like dismissing Ms. Yeo's candidacy?
I don't dismiss it at all. She's great. And look, I think she's a wonderful person. I think she's got – it's going to be very – she's got some challenges electorally in this race. I support almost every one of her issues. You know, we're both obviously on the same side on the marriage equality issue. And I was going to say for different reasons, but not really. We're both motivated by the same thing. And
let me ask you a question. It has nothing to do with this kind of – there's something totally different that made me think of the work you do with Delmarva Public Radio and also around the whole state of Maryland, that there's an argument that we need to keep on top of nitrogen phosphorus levels in our farms and in our developments because we're losing the battle in the Chesapeake Bay, and that the way we're doing by computerized models doesn't cover anything. And you can't really judge it. You have to be able to really know what each farm is doing and have much more stringent views of that, look at that. We're going to understand what's really coming to be and how to stop it. What are your thoughts on that? That'll be on your desk if you're governor.
Right. Well, it's not even an argument. It's a fact. And so, you know, the environment is my biggest issue. It has been my passion and has been the issue that we've been working on as Attorney General, as the head of the National Attorneys General Group on the Environment. We've, you know, had the largest enforcement cases in the history of Maryland since I've been Attorney General. Biggest settlements for air, biggest settlements for water, bigger settlements for asbestos. Working with the farms. I mean, the problem with your question, I don't want to be critical, because it is this, though.
All right.
It's there's no panacea for the Bay. The contributions of pollution come from everywhere. The farmers are one part of it, but we want to actually protect, in my view, we want to protect our farmers because they barely are making a living, and we want farms rather than townhouses, you know, next to the water. So, but we need to provide them resources and adequate alternatives. So the thing I've been pushing for 3 or 4 years is the idea of converting chicken manure into energy. So we have, because that's where the manure is where the nitrogen and phosphorus that you were talking about comes from. We have about 1.5 billion pounds of chicken manure produced in Maryland each year. We have the capacity to take 500 million pounds of that and convert into 55 to 60 megawatts of power. And what it does, it's a win-win-win for everybody. Obviously, the best way to prevent pollution in the Bay is never having it go in the first place. The farmers now have a saleable product. That is, they'll use exactly what they need to fertilize their fields and sell the rest. So they now have a source of income. And we're now reducing our dependency on oil and coal by having an alternative power source, which, of course, the utilities need to have 10% of their portfolio coming from this 20% down the road. I led the charge to get chicken litter to energy to be a tier one source so that it's economically viable.
So I apologize to our callers. We couldn't get through all of you. The phones weren't working quite
well.
I'll
come back.
But I hope you do come back. Doug Lander has been our guest. He's Attorney General of the State of Maryland. He's running to become the next governor of the State of Maryland in the Democratic primary, which takes place in June.
June 24th.
June 24th. Doug, thank you so much for being with
us. Thanks for having me.
On our way out of here, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. You can hear this show, podcast, our shows, also find out information about guests and what they stand for, what they're saying, by visiting us on the web at steinershow.org. You can also download and listen to our podcast on iTunes now. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Michelle Martin's next. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.